Can you hear me, Elohim?
Yes, we can. So we should start. Today, speaker is Brajesh Gupt, and he's going to talk about phenomenological consequences of quantum geometries in loop quantum cosmology. So go ahead, Brajesh.
Thank you, Ivan. So today I'm going to talk about the work that I've been doing for the past couple of months with Ivan Aguyo, Abhay Shekhar, Anton Jew, and Paramprit Singh. So moving on to the next slide. And nowadays, it's an exciting time for cosmology. I mean, from recent observational data from various experiments, WMAP-9, Planck, and BICEP-2, they have given quite a precise avenue to know more and more about the history of our early universe. At the same time, it's like equally exciting for quantum gravity as well. I mean, for instance, the recent observational data from BICEP-2 may have or may not have detected the signatures of quantum gravity from early universe. So nevertheless, in any case, it's an exciting motivation to push or to pursue finding or studying the observational consequences of quantum gravity on in the early universe. In such a scenario, while the full theory of loop quantum gravity is still on its way, many physical insights can be obtained about the physics of the Planck scale or the early universe by using the ideas of quantization framework of loop quantum gravity in cosmological scenarios, for example, loop quantum cosmology. And using the framework of loop quantum cosmology, one can work out several physical consequences of the quantum geometric effects on the power spectrum of inflation and so on. In this way, such an exercise provides opportunity for quantum gravity. I mean, first of all, it's a very nice confrontation between the theoretical ideas and the physical situations or physical observations that we get from the various experiments. On one hand, one can, by doing this exercise, one can learn new things about the early universe. At the same time, on the other hand, this exercise can, provide us guidance towards towards a full theory. When it can tell us something more that what we should be actually doing while we work out to find the full theory of quantum gravity. So moving on to the next slide, loop quantum cosmology is a canonical quantization of symmetry-reduced cosmological spacetime based on the framework of loop quantum gravity. And over the past, various people from around the world have contributed to this field. One of the most important or striking features of loop quantum cosmology is that, based on the quantization framework of loop quantum gravity, it endows space-time with a discrete quantum geometry. And one of the main repercussions of this discrete quantum geometry is that the Big Bang singularity, which is inherent in the cosmology based on classical GR, is resolved. And the Big Bang singularity is replaced by a quantum bomb. The occurrence of quantum bombs has been studied numerically and analytically in various matter models in various cosmological space-times. Interestingly, one can obtain a continuum approximation of the underlying discrete quantum geometry by the so-called effective description of loop quantum cosmology. Okay. So this effective description turns out to be very useful to work out or to study phenomenology in various cosmological models, because the effective equations turn out to be ordinary differential equations, which are easier to handle and easier to solve. Moreover, the effective description gives us a modified Friedmann equation where the resolution of singularity is more apparent. We'll discuss the modified Friedmann equation in a further slide. Using this effective description, The resolution of singularity has been studied in various, space-times. For example, in a recent study by Singh in 2009, it was established that an FRW model with a perfect fluid response equation of state, all the strong singularities are resolved. Moreover, the pre-inflationary dynamics has been studied by using the non-singular pre-inflationary evolution given by loop quantum cosmology. Okay. Moving on to the next slide. So the occurrence of big bounds was initially studied by a numerical method in 2006 by a series of papers by Ashikar, Pawlowski, and Singh. The idea in those papers was to consider a sharply peaked semi-classical state which describes a classical universe such as our late time, that is far from Planck regime where the energy density is very small, and evolve such a state using the quantum difference equation that comes as a result of quantum discreteness in the space-time given by loop quantum cosmology. What one finds that as the evolution happens, the state, instead of going to singularity, bounces from a finite volume. So this is what is can be seen in the first figure here. As you can see, so here phi is a massless scalar field which plays the role of internal time. V is a spatial coordinate here, and psi, mod psi is the absolute value of the wave function. So as you can see, the wave function is always peaked throughout the evolution on a non-zero value of V, so which signals that V equal to zero is not obtained in the evolution. Based on the effective description, one can derive a modified Friedman equation, which is given as a second bullet point in the second second table, it is on the left side. And as you can see in the second figure, the trajectory between expectation value of V and phi computed from effective theory, which is shown by blue curve, is in excellent agreement with the computation from loop quantum cosmology. So these error bars show the dispersion of the state, and the centers of the error bars correspond to the expectation value of V from LQC. So for it turns out that for sharply peaked state where the dispersion is very small, effective theory works very well. Okay, going on to the next slide. So since we will be talking about inflationary power spectrum in this talk, so I'll just briefly mention what we will mean by inflation in this talk. So here in this slide, I'll briefly talk about inflation in classical theory, and we'll be studying the flat FRW model with a scalar field phi and potential V phi, the metric of FRW space time that we'll be dealing with can be given in equation one. Equation 2 and 3 respectively show the Friedman equation and the Rai-Chaudhry equation. The equation number 3 is also sometimes called the acceleration equation. And equation 3 has been written in terms of phi dot, which is the proper time derivative of field phi, and V phi, the potential. So inflation is defined as a phase of accelerated expansion in our early universe. So from equation 3, it is clear that to obtain accelerated expansion, that is to obtain a double dot greater than zero, one will have to choose a potential V phi which is greater than phi dot square. That is, the contribution from the potential energy of the scalar field is higher than that of the kinetic energy. Moreover, if V phi is much, much larger than phi dot square, then the evolution equation of phi tells us that the value of phi dot changes very slowly. That means that the potential and the value of V very slowly as time passes, and energy density of the scalar field is almost constant. In such a scenario, one can use equation number 2 to solve for the scale factor, and it turns out the scale factor is exponentially growing with time. Okay, going on to the next slide. So, inflation in loop quantum cosmology has also been studied in the effective description of loop quantum cosmology. In particular, in the inflation in FRW model has been studied in great detail by Esticker and Sloan, and certain aspects of slow roll inflation have been studied in detail by Kuroshi and Karami. And recently, with the parameter Singh, we studied the inflation scenario in the presence of anisotropy as well, for example, Bianchi-Mann scale time. One of the important features of FRW spacetime, inflation in FRW model in LQC, is that inflation in such a spacetime is almost inevitable. It happens with a very high probability, as high as 99.99%. Moreover, a rigorous study of the evolution of perturbation, scalar and tensor perturbations have been studied in LQC by recent paper by Akuyo, Ashikar and Nelson, where the framework of quantum field theory on cosmological quantum spacetime was used to study the evolution of perturbation. Going on to the next slide. So the idea of quantum field theory on cosmological quantum spacetime is based on the framework developed by Ashikar, Kaminsky and Lewandowski a few years ago, which is called the quantum field theory on quantum space-time. I mean, other approaches to study the perturbation of, evolution of perturbation in cosmological background has also been developed by various people around the world. Okay. So one of the main results of using this framework of quantum field theory on FRW background is turns out to be that if one neglects the back reaction of the perturbation, then the evolution of perturbations on arbitrary quantum space-time, can be seen, or it turns out to be equivalent to the propagation of perturbations on a quantum-modified Dress matrix, where this Dress matrix is given in equation number 4. There is a typo here in equation number 4. It should be A tilde square. Sorry about that. Where A tilde is called the Dress scale factor, whose expression is given right below equation number 4. Okay. So the Dress metric here, I mean, there's one clarification one should keep in mind, that the Dress metric here is not the physical geometry. It's just a mathematical object which captures all the information that perturbations care about. Right? That is to say that in absence of a back reaction, the perturbations only care about certain moments of the background geometry, not all the fluctuations and so on. Okay. Going on to the next slide. It turns out that for sharply peaked states, where the fluctuations fluctuation in the background geometry is very small, the Dress scale factor, which is in the Dress metric, can be faithfully captured by the effective modified Friedman equation that we saw a few slides back. And it's here again in equation number 5. So x square is 8 pi g rho 1 minus rho over rho max, where rho max is the maximum allowed energy density is 0.41 rho Planck. For these states, although the framework of quantum field theory on quantum cosmological space-time is quite generic, it is true for arbitrary states. The phenomenology of the perturbations and the computation of LQC power spectrum was done using the effective effective equation like 5 for sublimating state in paper by Aguiar, Ostrich, and Nelson. Yeah, sure.
I'm just asking for a clarification. Does this mean that your analysis is valid as long as like h squared m Planck squared is less than rho max? Or what's the regime of validity where this is the right formalism?
Well, the regime scale of inflation is the middle.
Can you repeat the question? We couldn't hear it.
And, at what energy scale of inflation is this framework valid?
Say it again, please.
I'm just wondering, hi Ivan, this is Sarah. I'm just wondering if what's the regime of validity of this calculation? For example, is it valid as long as h squared m Planck squared is less than rho max, or what's the criteria?
Rajesh, go ahead.
Yeah, h squared m plus.
In this loop quantum cosmology framework, the rho max is really the maximum density that is allowed. There is no quantum state whose energy density would be bigger than rho max. So therefore, in particular, the inflation would have to occur at a density which is less than rho max. There's nothing, just that's correct, yeah. You always get confused between this higher and lower because of particle physics versus
the energy density at the bounds is maximum, given by rho max, and in the further evolution, as the expansion happens, energy density goes down. And at the onset of inflation, the energy density is very close to the usual.
Rajesh, you should get closer to the mic because we have difficulties in listening you guys.
So for sharply peak states, these calculations were done, okay, and the corrections to the standard inflationary power spectrum was computed, okay. Now, there's a natural question that one can ask, that what happens if you consider widely spread states? I mean, for states which the fluctuations in the background are not negligible. So for these states, one can ask, are there further corrections? And if yes, what kind of corrections are there and are they significant? Okay. So moving on to the next slide. Okay. So in this talk, we'll be considering various different types of quantum geometries. That is, for example, widely spread Gaussian states and non-Gaussian states, and study their the background evolution. For these states, we'll see that the effective equations are not true anymore. I mean, qualitatively they are true, but they are quantitative differences. And then we'll try to find out a modified effective theory that can describe the evolution of expectation values of the physical observers. And then as our main motivation was in the beginning of the talk, we'll try to compute the corrections due to finite or large fluctuations in the background geometry. So the numerical simulations of these states, which are not sharply peaked, it is quite numerically challenging, okay, because it demands a lot of computational power in terms of computational time and both the computational requirement as in memory. Okay. Going to the next slide. Using the recently developed numerical techniques, as it turns out that these simulations can be performed quite efficiently. And here I show two extreme cases. On the left, the evolution for a Sharpe peak state is shown, where again the comparison between effective theory and loop quantum cosmology is there. And as you can see, as one expected, and one has had already seen in the previous simulation, the effective theory agrees very well with the loop quantum cosmology. On the right, right plot, when we relax this condition of Sharpe peakedness, for example, if one considers the relative fluctuations in volume observable to be larger than 1, then there are more and more deviations from the effective theory. That is, the effective theory cannot be trusted anymore for, you know, these widely spread states. Okay. So moving on to the next slide. Here, there's a more quantitative, detail of the same analysis as we saw in the previous slide. That is, as one increases delta V over V, this quantity small delta, which signifies the fractional difference between LQC and effective theory, is increases. At the same time, the bound scale, that is the energy density at the bounds, decreases. Okay. So it means that is there a question?
Yes. Actually, there are several different derivations of this maximal rho. One is by analyzing the evolution of state, but there is another one by defining the quantum operator of density and proving that the spectrum of this operator is that the operator is bounded from below by exactly the same number. And there were such papers in the literature. So that would solve the problem of whether fluctuations can change this result.
Was that a comment or a question? I could not hear properly, sorry. Okay. Thank you. Going ahead. So one can ask, again, a question whether one can obtain a modified, you know, effective equations for these widely spread states. And as it turns out, then yes, one can. And one can derive equation 6, for example, which turns out to be true also for widely spread states, where H tilde is defined as the Hubble rate defined in terms of the relational time variable phi. And if you compare this equation number 6 to the previous effective equation, you can see there's a very small difference, but that's a very tricky difference as well. That in the parentheses, instead of rho max, you have rho bound. So the scale of, as we saw that for widely spread states, the scale of the bounds is different, which was not being captured by the previous effective equation, now is inherent in this modified effective equation. And numerical simulations show that equation number 6 approximates the expectation value of physical observers quite well. At the same time, we have also seen that the evolution given by equation number 6 also approximates the Drift scale factor within some approximation. For example, the states which are widely spread as where the relative fluctuations in volume observable is of the order of 2, the error in this approximation, that is, between the Drift scale factor and this modified effective scale factor, is of the order of 4%. Okay. So when using this modified effective equation, one can simplify the calculation. Okay. But the idea is still the same, that to compute the you know, evolution of perturbations on the quantum geometry, we perform explicit numerical simulations of the various states and compute the Drest scale factor numerically, and one finds that you know, the Drest scale factor can be approximated by this equation, so which just gives you another you know, extra simplification in the calculus. Moving on to the next slide. So this is what we are going to do. We'll consider various different states and compute the you know, Drest scale factor and compute the you know, we'll try to study the evolution of perturbations on this background. There's one you know, important point here is that as compared to the classical theory, since the bounce happens at a lower energy state, because so it modifies the evolution of various perturbation modes in the pre-inflationary dynamics. For example, as compared to the classical theory, where energy density would have been very high, energy density is bounded in LQC. That means to feel the curvature, or to feel the curvature in the inflationary pre-inflationary dynamics era, the perturbations, the modes of the perturbations would have to be more and more infrared. Okay. So that tells us that if the scale of the bounce changes, then the window of modes which were feeling the curvature would also be affected. That we'll see in the following slide. So go to the next slide. So there are two important assumptions here in this work. The first is that we assume that the fluctuation in the background state, for example, if the state is very widely spread, these fluctuations are large only in the quantum gravity regime. And as the expansion happens, the state becomes sharply peaked, or you know, the fluctuations in the background state smoothen out. The second assumption, which is more you know, sort of natural assumption, and which is taken quite frequently in the computation of perturbation, is that we neglect the back reaction of the perturbation. And this is important. The back reactions being small is important for the Drest metric approach to be self-consistent. So we'll be working in under these two assumptions. Moving on to the next slide. So here I give just a very brief description of how one computes, you know, power spectrum. In the standard inflation scenario, the power spectrum is given by the two-point function of the curvature perturbation. For example, equation 8 shows the power spectrum of scalar perturbation in terms of two-point function of the RK, which is a scalar curvature perturbation. And to compute the vacuum expectation values, in the standard inflationary scenario, one assumes that at the onset of inflation, these perturbations were in Punch-Davies vacuum. And in this framework, it turns out that recent Planck results show that the spectral index is less than 1. It's on the order of 0.96 with some uncertainty. The spectral index is defined as the logarithmic derivative of the power spectrum with respect to k. And that is how power spectrum changes as one changes, as the mode change. So we'll be doing similar computation, but the difference being in LQC, since the pre-inflationary dynamics is modified, not all the modes will be in the Punch-Davies vacuum at the onset of inflation. This is so there'll be some range of modes which will now feel the curvature, and they will be they will have a different vacuum state than one KV vacuum. And that is the main reason why there are one expects or one sees differences in the power spectrum. Moving on to the next slide. So here I show the comparison of power spectrum in LQC as compared to power spectrum, standard power spectrum. So PLQC divided by PBD, BD stands for one KV. For various different background quantum geometry. For example, the rightmost red curve corresponds to rho b being rho c. That represents a very sharply peaked state for which the bounds happen at rho critical. So rho c is the maximum rho max, what we were talking about. And as one considers more sharply peaked state, the energy density at the bounds changes. And here I show some sample calculations. That, for example, the leftmost curve corresponds to the energy density at the bounds being rho c divided by 8 and so on. In this plot, k star is the co-moving reference mode, that is so k star is the reference mode that is used in the in the observational experiment. So the difference being in the observational experiment k star, the physical k star is of the order of 0.002 megaparsec inverse, and here the k star is written in terms of co-moving coordinates. An important point about k star is that the value of k star, the reference mode at which one computes power spectrum and various other quantities, for example spectral index, depends on the value of phi bounds in this framework, so in this framework phi bounds is a free parameter of the initial data. Okay, so by changing the value of phi bounds, the value of k star will change. Okay. And since it's a co-moving, k star is co-moving, I mean, the relation between k star and the physical k star will depend on how much expansion there has been since the bounds till today. So as it appears on this plot that for widely spread states, the difference between the curve shifts what left, basically. That is, the difference between standard power spectrum and power spectrum in LQC is more for low K modes, that is the modes which are more infrared. And that is consistent with our intuition that since the scale of the bounds, scale of the energy scale in the pre-inflation dynamics for these states is lower, the modes will have to be more infrared to feel the curvature. Okay. So moving on to the next slide. Now one can, to compute the power, spectral index, for example, one can take the power level at k star and figure out at what values of k do these sharply peaked states have the same power spectrum as these widely spread states have the same power spectrum as the sharply peaked state as k star. And one can compute the value of spectral index and so on. So moving on to the next slide. So in the left plot, I show the spectral index computed for various widely spread states. So on x-axis, it's rho bounds. So as you move towards left, rho bounds decreases. That means you're considering more and more widely spread states. And for these, the spectral index decreases. So there is a small red, more red tilt for these widely spread states. And maybe the numbers are not clear, but in the left plot, the top number is 0.968.
and the lowest number is 0.963. So although there is a difference, this difference is very small, and this difference is within the error bar of the observation data. The right plot shows the value of K star, the reference mode, as one changes, you know, the width of the state. Okay. As we discussed, that the value of the reference mode depends on the value of phi bounds, which is a free parameter. Okay. And K star actually defines the observational window, I mean the window of values of K for which one would see, one would, you know, one can compare with observation.
Normally, I mean, when we define a window of observation, it's because we solve the horizon problem, right? So we have 55 beholds of inflation, and we know which scale we can see. So I'm a little bit confused about how you're going from the top to get that number. Normally, you start from the end of inflation and go up,
yeah,
get K star. So okay. And A, right? We know the behavior of A during the...
Yeah. So this value of K star is assuming that there has been 16 folding. Yeah. Yeah, so it's the same inflation. It's only the pre-inflationary dynamics that change. So the question is how is this the value of K star fixed? I mean, right? That's the question, and the answer is that this K star is in the co-moving coordinates, and its relation between co-moving and physical depends on how much inflation there has been since the bound. Okay. Yeah. So that's what I mean. I mean, by assuming that during inflation there has been certain number of e-folding, that one gets from resolution, the 60 e-folding. This case of computer.
So the question is about K star, so let me try to say something and please ask if it's not clear. In ordinary, most of the literature, of course, one assumes K star is not a physical quantity, or K is not a physical quantity because it depends on its co-moving quantity. The physical wavelength and or physical wave number and K has a factor of the scale factor in it. So the usual convention is to set scale factor to be equal to 1 today, which is extremely inconvenient in loop quantum cosmology. So the convention here is to set the scale factor to be equal to 1 at the bounds. But of course, any physical quantity you calculate, like the actual wave numbers, the physical wave numbers, they are unambiguous irrespective of how you do. So with this little caveat out of the way, the statement here is that one does say that one knows at the end of inflation or at the CMB era, the what K star corresponds to the physical wavelength to be about 1/8 of the maximum radius of visible universe. That is what that K star corresponds. So we're taking that physical wavelength, and then the statement is that we're taking it back in time, ideally, this is one day, right? Through inflation, through inflation, to the bounce time. It's just that, so that is the physical wavelength. So the important thing is that. The physical wavelength is just that. And then, unfortunately, with the case, K itself, there is always the scale factor coming in. And there is just a convention.
Thank you for clarifying. Okay. So far we have seen that by changing, by considering different widely spread states, there is a difference between, there is a difference in the structural state. And in these experiments, these calculations, we fix the value of phi bounds to be the same. Okay. And as we discussed, that the value of phi bounds is a free parameter, and that changes the K star, the reference mode. So here one can ask the question that, I mean, in previous calculation we fixed phi bounds and changes the spread of the state. Now, keeping the state sharp EB and changing the value of phi bound, which will change the co-moving state stars, can one generate same, special index? That is, at the phenomenological level, within the observational bar, are these two parameters degenerate with each other? That is, can I generate the same, physical quantities by keeping one fixed and changing the other? So one does experiment and work calculations, and for that we go to the next slide. And it turns out the answer is yes, in that within the observational bar, when there is a approximate degeneracy between choosing widely spread state and choosing or varying the value of phi bound for a sharply peaked state. So for the states that we considered in previous slide, turns out that the phi bound also changes. The degeneracy between the phi bounds and widely spread can be shown in this plot. So if one changes the rho bounds to, but if one takes the rho bounds to be small, the similar effect can be generated by using a phi bound, using a smaller phi bound. So, this tells us that although if there are fluctuations in the state, the parameter space of the theory is restricted by just one three parameters within the observational bar. So same effect can be generated by choosing a different phi bound. So this is good. This reduces the freedom in our parameter space. So increases the predictive power. So going on to the next slide. So to summarize, so in this work we have considered various different quantum geometry described by various widely spread states and non-Gaussian states, and studied the effect of these fluctuations on the LHC power spectrum, and see that for widely spread states, to feel the curvature, the modes would have to be more infrared. For K for these modes would have to be smaller. And within the observational error bar, at the phenomenological level, there seems to be an approximate degeneracy between the fluctuations of the background state and the initial three parameters in our initial data. That is the value of the phi bound. Yeah. And the bond. Thank you.
Questions?
I have a question. So when you talk about sharply peaked and widespread states, it seems that this has to be only with respect to the volume, because if you look at the conjugate variable, I would assume that when it's more widely spread in the volume, it's going to be more sharply peaked in the connection and vice versa. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, yes. You can choose. This is true for Gaussian states mostly, but if you choose non-Gaussian states, for example, one can choose a state which has more spread in both the V and the ecological momenta as well.
But it seemed that for the validity of the effective equations, what was important was the spread in the volume.
Yes.
I was wondering if there was a reason why that's the case. Are you just looking at expectation values of the volume to compare with the effective equation? Is that why that's what's important?
No, okay. So your second statement is true, that we are looking at the effective expectation value of the volume to test the validity of the effective equations. But I mean, for a fixed state, okay, the dispersion in volume and dispersion in the continuum momentum have a particular relation. Okay, so there's a one-to-one relationship between them. Okay, so I mean the deviation between the effective theory and LQC, as we saw that by changing delta V over V changes, or you know, for at a coarse level, if you choose a widely spread state in V, then the deviation from effective and LQC increases. So does the same behavior remain true for the conjugate variable as well? That highly depends on what kind of state you are choosing.
Thank you.
I don't know if your question was answered. So the key point is that the key point is the following, right? That in all simulations, it was assumed that the background quantum state, the quantum state of the background geometry was sharply peaked. And the question is, if in fact we consider states which are not sharply peaked at all, so these are not Gaussian, therefore the uncertainty both in the volume and the conjugate variable can be large. Okay? So it doesn't get more sharply peaked in the conjugate variable. They're just not Gaussian states. They're just general states. The question is, if one had such a state, and then one did perturbations, so one evolved quantum perturbations on such a quantum state, what is the effect on the power spectrum? That is what Brajesh is calculating. Okay? So your question is that why is it that one is only monitoring the expectation value of the volume and the fourth power of the volume and so on? That is because those are the only quantities which enter the evolution of the perturbations. So one is only looking at those quantities which affect the perturbations. The rest is not important as far as the propagation of perturbations is concerned. And that is why one focuses there. Is this clear, Jonathan? No.
Yeah, it is. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Sarah made a comment, and she's absent. I mean, I just want to sort of emphasize that throughout this work for the detailed calculations, like these numerical plots, of course, the potential is fixed because you can't do a calculation without the detailed plots without fixing a potential. That's certainly true. So the point is that in these calculations, there are many, many different assumptions that one makes. One is, of course, the potential, but then there is an assumption about what kind of background quantum state of geometry one is using, and so on. Right? What is the value of that energy density at the bounds, and so on and so forth. So that there are many different parameters being used. So here one is keeping the potential to be the standard m squared phi squared potential, and one is looking at robustness with respect to varying the quantum state. And this is something that, of course, in the inflationary scenario, one never looks at, because this is really the quantum state of geometry, which is not sharply peaked on classical geometry. So that really is something that one doesn't look at. So this is a novel angle that he's looking at. And for that, he's keeping the potential and other parameters during inflation the same.
More questions or comments?
I have a question. Can you look also at how the dispersion evolves, how the fluctuation of the volume evolves?
Yeah, so so it turns out that for massless scalar fields, we already have done the simulation. And for the massive scalar fields, we are still, because there are some numerical challenges in the when you consider the field as well. So that work is under progress. Say it again? So at this point we don't know, because we don't have the full quantum simulation for the massive field so far.
Sorry, I'm asking about back reaction problems with a massless scalar field, because usually you see those even sort of semi-classically. that a massless scalar field looks like. It has a huge bunch of stuff.
So, okay. So, I mean, in full generality, we cannot answer that question right now, but I can try to approximately answer it. But in the pre-inflationary dynamics, close to the bound, the situation is, it's kinetic dominated bound. So even if there are massive potential, close where in the quantum gravity regime, it is dominated by only massless scalar field. Okay. So if you, there one can, there since the bound scale energy density is high, one can still assume that the vacuation is small.
More questions? If not, let's thank Rajesh again.